Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, you're very welcome to this week's podcast. Madeline O'Connell was part of the Old Cork Elite Society, and I was privileged to have met Madeline and carried out a brilliant interview with her. This interview took place at her old family home in Cork. Madeline O'Connell, it's lovely being here with you in your own house. Can you talk to me first about your early part of your life? Where did you grow up?
I grew up on the Lee Road in a house called Lackadove, and my grandfather, who lived next door in an old house called Clanlochlin, when my father was getting married, he built Lackadove for my father as a wedding present, I presume, and it was finished in 1909. Was still very much occupied there. We lived there. I lived there till I qualified as a doctor and went to England and worked at the beginning of the war.
And in just bring me back to your earliest memories.
Lackadove?
Yes, please.
Well, it was a lovely house, a house that I've never wanted to go back and see. And I've been offered by the people who live there, you know, would I like to go? I wouldn't, because I loved it so much and grew up there. And you go back and you see it, it's always different to what you imagined. It's better to have your memories rather than your what you see now, because it's usually much smaller. It was a big house and lots of room for... We had nurseries up at the top of the house, it'll tell you, were three-storey high, a day and a night nursery, and we had staff, three staff mostly, not to mention governesses and things like that, which are totally anachronism now, isn't it? And we had a charmed life, and I mean, I went to... I went to a very early, my earliest school was just a little day school in Cork. But when my mother died at five, after that, my father got married when I was nine. And then I was sent, first of all, down to Blackrock to the Ursulines at very young, because I was looked upon as something extraordinary. I was so young. And then eventually I went to Mount Anvil to Sacred Heart, which I didn't like. I didn't like the Sacred Heart nuns at all. And after that, I was sent to England, the Holy Child Convent in Sussex, Mayfield, which I loved.
So you really had a privileged
upbringing. Oh, very privileged upbringing. I mean, we were never spoiled. We were never given a lot of money or anything like that. But our food and our education, those are the things money was spent on those days. Nobody, like nowadays, they didn't have money for clothes. You had enough. I mean, you were dressed well, but you wouldn't be spending a lot. You wouldn't get money to spend. You know, your pocket money would be, I don't even remember having pocket money much till I was in college. And so...
Your brothers and sisters, how many brothers and
sisters? I had two older brothers. One was 6.5 years older, Ivor, and he became a lawyer and eventually was a partner with my father in the office at a very late date, but that's another story. And then my other brother was 5 years older, Joe. And then I had no immediate near family. When my father married again, I had a half-brother, David Horgan, who was 10 years younger than me, and a half-sister who was 12 years, I think, Joan. So that was my family.
Now, have you memories of your grandfather and your grandmother?
No.
From either maternal side?
No, the only one I remember is Windle, because I think my grandfather Horgan was, they were both dead when I was born. I certainly don't remember them. And I could tell you the dates they died, because I have it all there, but I was very young. I certainly don't remember the Horgan side at all. But I remember being taken to visit my grandfather in college, Windle. And he fell out with my father, although he was a great friend of my father's, till my father fell in love with his daughter, and then he fell out with him. He was... my grandfather Windle was Anglo-Irish. You know, his background would have been... he was related to Somervilles and Townsends.
Down in West Cork?
Yes, down in West Cork. Oh, yes.
Edith Somerville.
I met her.
Oh, my goodness. Well, she was a great...
My father took me when I was about 15, 16, down to meet her. I just remember this little lady, you know, very small and very severe, and you know, nothing much else about her. You know, I'd be in awe, naturally. But I recently met a third cousin of mine who would have been a nephew of hers, a great nephew of hers, I suppose, Somerville.
Oh, yes.
Very recently, and... a very nice man. He's now handed over the house in Castletown to his son.
Being sent away to England at that time, was that to get you away from all the what was going on at home?
No. It was the thing that was done in those days. Everybody went to school. If you had the money, you went to boarding school. And a lot of people from Cork, I know families here whose children went to England. I had two other girls with me.
To get
Cork.
A proper grooming. And
yes, it was all part of your education. You know, not now, of course. And you would be sent sometimes to a finishing school in France or somewhere, which I wasn't. But my father was very cosmopolitan, that I went to France at a fairly early age and stayed with a French family. So my education was, you know, pretty broad in general. You didn't realise at the time, but looking back it was, I realise it, you know.
It gave you a broader view of
everything.
What was happening in the world.
Yes, in the world. And I tell you, what broadened my view completely was living in England during the war and coming back here to the same sort of approach to things as was before. And you'd really realise how it took me time to realise, you know, the people I'd known and grown up with, they were still in that backwater. And they'd never, you know, they had the same values.
I know.
They
were still in that, in that time.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
that they hadn't progressed
any
way. But, you know, you were, I know it was the Warriors, but just prior to that, the country was in dire straits because of the economic war that De Valera us into.
Yes, but it somehow didn't impinge on us. My father obviously earned enough money that it didn't make us feel, you know, we weren't really conscious of it so much.
But what was going on around you? Did you not notice it?
No, because you weren't really exposed to it. Not at all.
I know, you were very sheltered.
Yes,
really.
Very. That's really... When I went to college then, I left the sort of... If I hadn't gone to college, I'd have been like a lot of my cousins and who married local people and never moved out of Ireland except to go on holidays. And I noticed, you know, I could say I'm a bit superior about it, but it's not right to be severe because they haven't been exposed. But I noticed a difference of way in my thinking. totally to what they think, you know, over the years. But
and of course, it was customary as well to have arranged marriages in those days.
Oh yes, well, it wasn't really arranged, not with our, not in our thing. But you were encouraged to meet. You met the same sort of people, and it's only when I went to college that I met a totally different lot of people, because they were would have been people who were really, even my husband, he was in the same class as me, and we went to college together, knew each other well because the classes were small, never went out, as they say, and but his father was a chemist in Mallow, and it took him a lot. He lost a money, lot of money, because he was a farmer as well, and he bought a farm just when Dev killed all the calves, and he lost everything. And it took him scrimped to put my husband through college. And I know he used to get money to feed himself, and he'd spend it on something else, you know.
I know, yes, so. So he actually suffered the effects then of that time.
Yes, oh yes, he did, yes, yeah. Very much so. Now, neither of my brothers, my eldest brother did law, of course, and he then went in the Irish Army for a bit, mm-hmm. because my father didn't take him into the office till he was actually dying, which was a terrible thing, because my brother was quite old then. But that was a Victorian sort of scene. And my younger brother, Joe, he became a surgeon. He went to Trinity and he did his degree, and he was a very clever man. And he worked a lot in England before he came back and did more or less surgery and general practice in Tralee, which he shouldn't have been doing, because he was a man who should have been in the university. He had that sort of brain, you know.
You know, we were approaching the Second World War, and well, things were, you see, were difficult,
yes.
Again.
Oh, yes, we were approaching the Second World War, and I qualified the year the Second World War broke out.
In 1939?
Yes, I qualified in June. My father sent me on a holiday to Canada because my step-grandmother, Windle's widow, she was step now because my grandmother died quite young, Madeline Windle, who I'm called after, she died quite young, and he married a cousin of hers. And when they left here, that's another story, I won't tell you, you'd know all about that by reading about it. He was invited to Canada to lecture in philosophy in St. Michael's University in Toronto, a professor there. But and so I went to visit her, and I was coming back via New York the day that, the day I sailed from New York was the day I arrived in Cork off the Mauritania, and we sailed from New York, blackout, was the day Hitler marched into Poland that I arrived in Cork, and we didn't know where we were landing.
Really? Yes, yeah. It was. It must have been a very scary moment.
Oh, it was scary. But when you're young, you take these things in your stride. And funny enough, the day before I was sailing, I got a telegram, because I tried to get a job in Toronto, as I was newly qualified, and we had connections there, medical. I got a telegram in New York to say job awaited me if I wanted it back in the Banting and Best Institute, which was the man who discovered insulin, if I wanted it. But at that stage, war was so, it was all over the papers and everything, you felt you had to get home. So it changed my life. Then we didn't know what was happening. It was the cold year, you know, to begin with, the Cold War. Nothing too active happened to begin with. And I had a job in college lecturing to students in pathology, poor students. And then I heard of it. Well, it's a long story. I went to England then.
No, but please tell me.
Will I?
Oh, do, yes.
But I had a 3-month job. It was only a temporary one in college. then I met a classmate of mine who was here in Cork, and he said my husband-to-be had been in touch with him, and there was a job vacant in Worcester Royal Infirmary for the lowest of low, which is what you would be at that stage as a house physician. So I got a telegram to say job awaited me. I had then to go to Dublin, and I had an uncle who knew the British ambassador, and he took me to see him. We showed him the telegram, because you could not go to England unless you had a job. You wouldn't be allowed. So he gave me a visa or whatever it was at that stage, and I flew to England from Dublin, and there was only one other person on that plane with me to Liverpool, Dublin to Liverpool.
My, and who was that person? Did you ever find out?
Yes, I did know. It was a jockey called Michael Beardy.
My goodness.
When I arrived...
Because I would imagine not too many people would want to go to England right
no,
at the beginning.
Well, I've always looked back and think, you know, people... weren't you great, but you just did it because you were young. You had, I suppose, a sense of adventure or something. And so I went, and when I arrived in Liverpool, we were interviewed by... There were these young men who were sort of Secret Service, I presume, of some sort, and they were interviewing everybody, and they read all the letters I had in my bag, which was from various boyfriends, you know, highly embarrassing. And I had a photograph of myself and one of the girls in my class taken together in our cap and gowns, and he looked at it and he said, oh, Dr. Gallagher went home yesterday.
Oh my goodness. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
Anyway, I proceeded down to Worcester to be not met by anybody, blackout. I knew where I had to go, which was a kind of pub, rooms like they have in England, a place in the town where I went. And eventually my husband, he wasn't my husband then, St. John O'Connell, he came and he told me that I hadn't a job, but I had to wait for an interview. So now I was walking around under suspicion for a fortnight waiting to be interviewed for a job, which wasn't funny. Anyway, I got the job and proceeded from there. And owing to my short spell in the pathology department in college, the professor there knew a man in Gloucester who wrote to him, the Gloucester man wrote to him, said, did he know anybody in England? Because he was looking for an assistant. So I then moved from being a lowly house physician to being an assistant pathologist overnight. But then I got married. We got married in England during the war. Nobody could come over. We had friends around and a few relations of mine. And we got married in Worcester. And my husband was then working in Cheltenham and I was in Gloucester.
Okay, so you separated.
I would travel backwards and forwards every day.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yes. I was, pathology was a job that ended a certain time of the day.
Right.
Because you were in a laboratory. I don't remember being on at night, funny enough, ever. Although I must have been, you know. But I never stayed there. It was different to now. Mm. I mean, it would be totally different. And
when did you decide then, both of you, to come back to Ireland?
We didn't decide. My husband then, he worked at orthopaedics. He went in the Air Force after end of the war. He was in Germany and he specialised in orthopaedics, starting in a hospital in London. We then went to London, where I had a job at Harefield Hospital, which was a big chest unit in the pathology department, and laboratories, in the laboratory. And he worked at a hospital called St. Vincent, which was orthopaedics entirely. He then joined the Air Force, and he went to Germany. He came back then and he got a job as orthopedics in the London, which is one of the biggest hospitals in London, under two very famous orthopedic surgeons. And then because in the meantime he'd done his fellowship in Edinburgh when I was having my first child back here. But life wasn't easy, I can tell you, in those days. He was then applied for a job here. Noel Brown started the orthopaedic service here in Ireland, and St. John was appointed to Cork. And
that was a first, really.
He was the
it?
First orthopaedic surgeon in Cork, and he started the. He was in charge when they developed the orthopaedic hospital, which they're now closing.
Oh, and it that was a whole era. Indeed, mm-hmm. It was. Mm-hmm. The Lusitania during the war years,
yeah.
When it sunk,
yeah.
Wasn't your father in?
He was the coroner who brought in the verdict of murder against the Kaiser.
Would your father have ever spoken about that?
Oh yes, he often spoke about it.
And did he express how he must have seen quite a number of bodies?
Oh yes, he saw the whole thing, of course. But of course, what I remember is more now what I've read. And I've read a lot of books.
But did you quiz your father on it at any
stage? No, not really, because in those days, you see, first of all, I was away at school. Victorian times were totally different to now. You did not get in. Now, my husband, when he got married and we came back, he was the person who used to talk to my father more.
Oh, I see.
You see, your father and your... You didn't get involved unless you just heard it by accident.
Yeah.
You weren't encouraged to take part in those sort of things, ever.
Oh, my God. Of course, it was a different world, different times.
It is a different world.
And it wasn't your place to
no,
to
no, no.
say
And
anything.
Then, you see, mm-hmm. as I said, I was away at school from the word go.
Yeah.
And then, extraordinary though, now my half-brother and sister, they would have known much more of my father than I would. They were directed by their mother. You see, there was nobody to direct me.
Your introduction to the Fleischmann family, first of all, the older Mr. Fleischmann.
Yes, I will tell you. Now, as I remember it, but I'm not sure I'm totally accurate on this, old Alois came... He was appointed organist at the North Cathedral. Now, the girls would tell you that. From Germany. He was appointed organist at the beginning, just at the start of the First World War. And
that's right, yeah.
He was interned then because he was German.
He was. He was only. He must have just arrived mm-hmm, in Cork mm-hmm, City mm-hmm. here.
I don't know how my father got to know about it or knew of him, but he was partly, there was other people, but he was instrumental in getting him out. And they became staunch friends from then on. Mm-hmm. And old Alois used to come to Lackadove frequently. And I was a very small girl at the time. And when he came up in the evenings, he used to come up and tell me stories. And his broken English, he never had anything but broken English, about lions and tigers. And I used to be, you know, enthralled by these and terrified, and you know, but never forgotten it. And of course, ever afterwards, we knew the Fleischmann family. And then young Alois, as we called him, I won't tell you his nickname because he forbade me to tell it. He was made a freeman, and I was at the time. And he said, "You are not to mention under death. I will personally kill you." So I feel I'm not really entitled
okay,
to.
Okay, yes.
So because we had, he then became friends with my two older brothers. Mm-hmm. He spent a lot of time in Lackadove. And we had, in Lackadove, there were front stairs and back stairs. They'll tell you, you know, long corridors, downstairs and upstairs. And these three used to have daggers, walking sticks, and chase each other around and have, you know. And I just knew Alois from that way on. My father and my stepmother, they were always very interested in music, art, everything, you know, they had, it was a very good background growing up, because they bought pictures. Hennessy, they encouraged Patrick Hennessy, who was there's a couple of his pictures, you know, when he arrived in Cork with not a penny, and they had him staying at Lackadove, and they had him up there. And so generally their background, our background, was arts.
Yes, I know. And so yeah. it developed.
And then my father sent me on holiday, like I went to France. That was early from people. And, you know, I was encouraged to be like that.
And that was very much part of the gentry of the
time.
Oh,
yes.
But not all gentry.
A lot of gentry at that time, if you think about the families in Cork now, like Dwyer's and these people, they weren't into the arts. They were into the hunting, shooting, fishing kind of side.
Oh, I see. So it was divided up like that, was
yes,
it?
Yes, it did. Oh, yes. There was the university side, I suppose. That's why we were sort of really directed that way. Because my father, I suppose, was intelligent enough to appreciate that. And he seemed to be into, he was big into politics and the running of Cork City. He was chairman of the Harper Board for years, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that was our background, more even than my cousins would have been.
Okay, so it was more academic in that sense.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we always were taken to the theatre and things. Mm-hmm. I mean, growing up, we went to a lot of theatre. I remember going to the Opera House a lot because my father, again, was chairman of the Harbour Board at one stage, you know. And it's not the Opera House, not the Harbour Board. He was chairman of the Opera House as well.
Would you have seen a lot of Gilbert and Sullivan plays?
Oh, all these things. All these things, you see. All those are part of my background. Mm-hmm. And opera. And plays of all sorts of kinds, you know.
Cork, of course, was thriving with its arts movement at the time.
Yes,
wasn't it
was. Right? It was. And then the music side of it. And when they travelled, they always had things they brought back, you know, that were of travel, you know, of interest. It was, you didn't realise you were in that scene, but it's afterwards when I grow up and you know, I look at some of them now, the children, there are families, but there are a lot of the families don't have any background like that.
And do you feel happy that you were part of that
background? Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it gives me now, at an older age, quite a different, I'm interested in everything. I'm interested in sport as well.
Yes. But the performing arts in the city were, you had in the college when you were there.
And ballet UCC, and all these things.
Yeah, they had an arts society there.
That was what I was talking about.
Yes. You were a member of that society. Yes,
yes. We had this thing. I don't think I was a member of other societies too. You know, you join things in college. Because you got to know people and it was part, and I was on the hockey team, I was tennis, the lot.
But just to fill me in on your time when you returned after getting married, after the war years, and you were back here in Cork again, and you were rearing a family.
Yes, I had three children when we came back.
Ascension was...
very busy.
Yes, of course, because he was the only...
He worked in Finbar's then to begin with. Because there wasn't an orthopaedic hospital. And he was the only orthopaedic surgeon here. Now, I could talk about him. When he went to Finbar's, there were women down in the wards there who'd broken their hips and were confined to bed. And he pinned their hips, which was the old-fashioned way of... And they got up and walked and were able to go home. He said it was like the dead arising. Because nobody else was able to do anything for them.
And for the first time, the idea of having your hip either replaced and repaired or whatever, it gave them a new lease of life.
I don't know whether their families were pleased to see them or not.
But in the meantime, you were rearing a family at home. Now,
yes.
Did you keep up your friendship with the Fleischmanns, or were you communicating?
Well, it was a gradual thing. You see, I came back, I was busy with the family. We will first of all lived in Glanmire for a bit, which was outside town. Then we, if you can imagine, you were into a whole new setup, whereas I was able to get help, which I never had much in England. Then we bought a big house down in Blackrock. And so socially my life changed then. And to begin with, I seemed to be, well, I don't know, I suppose looking after the family, meeting people gradually, you know, and involved with St. John was working very hard. So you were kind of just running your family life. And then I started playing golf. So I used to play golf. Now, that wasn't immediate, but I did start. And then I was back in a social scene, totally different. And it was only a gradual thing then that my husband was very interested in opera and reading. He was a great reader and he was a very clever man. And we started gradually then, like going to the Wexford Festival and things like that. And then we'd have visiting medicals and we had an ordinary social life, like entertaining and all the rest of it. And it's sort of, one's life evolved, really. And we did a bit of everything.
And
then he was very much, into racing, so which I didn't know anything about at all until I married him. But his father had rented a stud farm in Mallow, and we got into the horse side of things, and he was very knowledgeable, my husband, on horses and breeding. And when he retired, he became chairman and president of the Irish Breeders, Flat Breeders Association. So we had a totally other life then.
Was that something, a part of your life that you particularly would have enjoyed? I
wasn't a horsey person because I wasn't ever physically involved with horses and I was terrified of them. And I admitted it freely, and I wouldn't go near them. And I had to take my daughter hunting and things like that with awful ponies and stuff, which wasn't funny. But, you did sort of a certain amount. But I wasn't. I became interested in the breeding and the things, and I watch all racing now. And, look up, I wouldn't know so much about the breeding, but the flat horses I would, watch.
Yeah,
and we had race horses and everything.
Yeah. But it was, what an interesting life and what an interesting...
I agree.
My God, at 95 and still going strong. Thanks.
I wouldn't say that.
You've been listening to part of a long interview carried out with Madeleine O'Connell. If you're interested in the full interview, you can access it by going to irishlifeandlore.com. My name is Maurice O'Keefe, and thank you for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.